You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. Lake Tahoe is the sapphire crown jewel of the Sierra Nevada. The Washoe tribe are the original inhabitants of what they named Daoaga, edge of the lake. And the word Tahoe is actually a mispronunciation of the Washoe word for lake. Since then, John Muir has called the largest alpine lake in North America a water heaven. And today, roughly 40,000 people call Tahoe home, with some 15 million tourists each year. But a new report is once again raising the alarm over the lake's long-term health. The report is from the Tahoe Environmental Research Center at UC Davis, which has conducted yearly reports on the lake since 1968. That's more than 50 years. Joining us now is the center's director, Jeffrey Schlatto. Jeffrey, welcome to Insight.
Thank you, Vicki. Nice to be here.
Given that you're the founding director of the Tahoe Environmental Research Center, how long have you been studying Lake Tahoe, and what drew you to Lake Tahoe?
Well, I first saw it, actually started working there, was 1995. I'm originally from Australia, the driest continent, and coming to Tahoe the first time, it was very alluring. It was just coming over Echo Summit, and I felt I needed to do more here.
Yeah, I remember my first time taking that trip over Echo Summit and that turn, and then you see the beautiful vastness of Lake Tahoe. What still excites you about researching Lake Tahoe, you know, decades later?
Well, it's a large lake, but when you compare it to something like Lake Superior, it's quite small. It's the feeling of when you're in the middle of the lake and looking around, you can actually see the whole perimeter of the watershed, of the whole basin, and this idea that this is really a natural laboratory to study the lake, the forests, everything. And especially, as you say, 15 million people, what impact do we have on the lake?
Yeah, and as we've learned, we do have a great deal of impact. Given that researchers at UC Davis have been continuously monitoring the lake since 1968, what has been the goal of these annual reports?
Well, part of it is just seeing what the status and trends of the lake are. Is it getting better? Is it getting worse? I think it was Charles Goldman sort of first started this in the late 50s, but late 60s was when it was became regular. The goal was originally just to bring it back to its full clarity, but that's turned out to be a very big challenge because of an evolving set of challenges.
Yeah, I mean, given that this monitoring has happened for more than half a century, what have been the biggest changes in that time?
Well, I guess the gorilla is climate change. So we wrote our first paper on climate change at Tahoe in 2006. And what we were predicting or foreseeing at that time has come true and probably more. But it's starting to evolve now. It's not just the lake's getting warmer or the summer season is extending. It's, you know, this year for the first time, we're seeing very large changes on the ecology and the biology of the lake. And that was something that did catch us by surprise. Mm.
Given that Lake Tahoe, it's the largest alpine lake, but I understand that other lakes are larger, but it's still quite large. It's 72 miles of shoreline. It's the second deepest lake in America, Crater Lake National Park being first in Oregon. That's a good amount of researching playground for you. How are you able to do such a thorough report on such a wide expanse, and what are the biggest challenges in doing so?
Well, first and foremost, we have an incredible team. And so we have people who work in the forest and on the lake, and we have scuba divers and things like that. The hardest part is continuity. A lot of our funding comes from agencies, state agencies, the federal government, increasingly from philanthropy. So keeping the money going to allow continuity. It's one thing to say we did something for 3 or 4 years and then stopped. And that's always the biggest shame is having to stop something interesting.
Well, let's get to this year's annual report. What surprised you about it?
Well, as I said, it was the biology. So seemed to be three parts to it. One is what most people experience when they go to Tahoe and they're on the beach or clambering around the rocks. It's the attached algae on the rocks, and it's this this other kind of algae, you know, we refer to it as metaphyton. It's free-floating, but in long clumps that washes up on the beach. So that's certainly one thing, or those two parts of the nearshore algae, is something that has really exploded this year. And it's even since we put this report together, the metaphyton on the South Shore is just exploding.
What's contributing to the increase in this algae?
I wish we really knew definitively. You know, one of the ideas is we have lost, just again in the last year or two, some of the a lot of the zooplankton. These are the microscopic animals that eat algae and eat smaller animals. They themselves have disappeared. And if you've suddenly lost, well, you can imagine, think of it as a garden. If you've suddenly lost the gardeners, then the garden and the weeds and everything is running amok in a way. So that could be one of the things. It could be inputs from sort of the wildfire smoke from last year certainly played a part, but not the major part. The big riddle is the last 2 years, 3 years even, have been very, very dry years, drought years. And we normally get a lot of nutrients, you know, which feed the plants, mm-hmm. from the streams. Yet, despite record low flows and nutrient inputs, we're getting record high algae.
Mm. When we're talking about zooplankton, I mean, your report really zeroed in on mysis shrimp and also phytoplankton. What role, if you can expand on that, do these tiny creatures play in Lake Tahoe's overall health?
Well, they were introduced to Lake Tahoe. The mysis shrimp themselves were introduced in the mid-60s. And you know, soon after their introduction, it was noticed that other zooplankton had disappeared. So they're larger than most zooplankton. You can think of them as being about the width of your fingernail, half the width of your fingernail. So they're very voracious in their appetites. What they particularly consumed was something called Daphnia, which is also known as the water flea, but it's an omnivorous creature. It just eats everything. It just shovels whatever it can into its mouth. And a lot of what it was shoveling were very fine silts and clays, as well as very small algae. So with its demise to mysis, we suddenly lost this internal cleaning capacity. And that was happening at the same time when development at Tahoe was taking off. So we had these two negative forces, the loss of internal cleaners, plus a lot of the erosion, a lot of the disturbance created by millions of people starting to come in.
So mysis shrimp were introduced about 50 years ago, correct?
Correct.
And when you were talking about Daphnia, those water fleas, aren't those good for kokanee salmon? Is there this kind of tug and pull of these different organisms and the impact that they're having on the lake's clarity, but also other species that are home to the lake?
Yeah, well, kokanee salmon is another introduced species, so it's sort of hard to know where to stop in all of this. Unlike the mysis, kokanee salmon seem to be a welcome addition. I mean, they're beautiful fish. The kokanee salmon probably feed more on small native minnows, but the native minnows like the Daphnia. And so, yeah, we have disturbed the system. And I don't think, while it's maybe a lofty goal to say we want to restore it to what it was, we know that would never happen. But I think it can be restored to something closer to what its native system was, so that introduced species that are considered desirable, like the kokanee, a lot of people like fishing for lake trout. Again, another introduced species. And one of the long-term goals is to introduce or reintroduce the Lahontan cutthroat trout, which was the native fish.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Jeffrey Schlatto, director of the Tahoe Environmental Research Center at UC Davis, providing more details on this year's State of the Lake report at Lake Tahoe. We're talking about a lot of contributing factors here. And one of the quotes in the release that stuck out to me, I mean, you had said any one of these changes would be a big deal in a single year. All three occurring at once is particularly alarming. What does that mean?
Well, I thought it was self-explanatory. Clearly, it's not. I think it's that, to me, it's suggesting that the system in this last year became very out of balance. I mean, we don't understand, at least I don't understand, why we have this, you know, the algae in the lake mm-hmm. have increased by three times, possibly five or six times over the long-term mean, and why it occurred so quickly. One idea is, well, as I said, the zooplankton, the mysas are missing. Maybe the grazing's not going on. You know, there are people who say, well, they wouldn't eat those things normally. So there are lots of unanswered questions. So it is a matter of concern, but the point I try to make is that it's also a great opportunity. We don't, you know, when things are normal, when things are sort of in balance, even if it's a balance we don't like and not the balance we're trying to achieve, it's hard to notice changes. But suddenly we have, the system has received this huge change and it's going to respond. So what, you know, what we're expecting is that now that the mysas are gone, at least temporarily, we're going to see Daphnia come back. We want to know how quickly they're growing. Are they increasing the clarity and why? Are the little minnows increasing in size and in numbers? Are the fish getting larger? So all this possibility, this little window that's open for maybe 3 or 4 years. And that's where I think there's a great opportunity. And once we know those things, then it's a whole lot easier to start designing, you know, different management approaches. Mm.
Your center also has a report, and you released it last month, on the clarity of Lake Tahoe to go in combination with this annual State of the Lake report. We were talking about how development really began about a half century ago and has had a dramatic impact on the lake. What was the clarity of the lake 50 years ago, and what is it now?
Well, back then it was something like 100 feet. So, I mean, that wasn't the same every week, every month. It, you know, it fluctuated. Typically, it's clearer in winter than in summer. Right now, it's more like 70 feet. So we've lost, you know, over 30 feet of clarity. I guess what many of us find disappointing is that it's stayed at that level for about the last 20 years, you know, despite a lot of investment, a lot of science, and a lot of people trying to do what we all thought was the right thing. It's just not. It's not working as quickly or as well as we'd hoped. So, you know, one idea is, well, if the focus till now has been on reducing what comes into the lake, albeit imperfectly, maybe in combination with activities that restore this internal cleaning capacity, maybe that's what we need.
Mm. Given that roughly 8 million people live within a half day's drive to Lake Tahoe, what has the human impact been on the lake in recent years or in the past 20 years since, when it comes to clarity, it's kind of just plateaued?
Well, I mean, what causes the decline in clarity is actually pretty simple. Doing something about it is the hard part. So it's because of the wavelength of light. We know that it's very small particles in the size range of about 1 to 4 microns. Bearing in mind the thickness of a hair is about 100 microns. So these are literally invisible particles, but they affect light. So keeping those out of the lake is very hard. It's a tough engineering problem, which is why I think we need alternative approaches. So we know what the problem is. As people come into the basin, as they tramp around the forest, as they drive on the roads, and dust gets wafted up into the air, it all floats out onto the lake and eventually settles. Wildfire smoke brings fine particles onto the lake. So that's one issue is the source of what's there. The other is where climate change comes in. So climate change is making giving us more rain and less snow. We're getting the runoff into the lake occurring sooner. And when a stream comes into the lake, whether it floats out across the surface or whether it plunges down to the bottom, again, depends on the warmth of the lake and how that's changing. So there's no end to complexity.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess part of our mission is, we believe, is to try to sort through the complexity and make it as simple as we can.
When you were talking about those incredibly fine particles in the water, you know, there's been a growing conversation, and I just think general knowledge when it comes to microplastics. What role are microplastics having on Lake Tahoe?
Well, it's more than we would have thought, it seems. Unlike most places where sewage water goes back into the source water. So here we are in Sacramento, and between the source of the Sacramento River water and where we are, water is being withdrawn from the river, consumed, treated, and re-injected back into the river. So a lot of microplastics come in through our wastewater. Lake Tahoe has the great fortune and luxury of not having wastewater discharged into it. All the wastewater is from taken outside the basin. But we have microplastics sort of in a similar level to many other places. Where are they coming from? Well, it's coming from purely our activities. Our littering, our maybe overuse of plastics, things like that. So it's a problem that we probably have. It's within our ability to control, but it requires changing human behavior, which is a really tough problem.
Given that wildfires also contribute to the lake's declining clarity, and, you know, we've become more accustomed to mega fires. It doesn't even have to be the Caldor Fire, which was near Tahoe. It could be the Dixie Fire or other wildfires, not even in California. I mean, what kind of projection do you have in terms of the role the wildfires in years to come are going to have on Lake Tahoe's overall health?
Well, that has been a big concern. I guess last year, a group of scientists from several institutions, we were working collectively to understand the impacts of last year's fires. I mean, they were, you know, the largest as far as smoke input that we have experienced. We're just probably a couple of months away from having a final report on that. But whatever the consequence is, it's something we're going to have to adapt to, because the fires are going to stay, as you say. They don't even have to be local. And it's, once again, one of these impacts of climate change.
Yeah, and give it further compounded by adapting or getting accustomed to drought conditions from one year to the next. Last year, the natural rim or the lake level fell below the natural rim, and which means it stopped flowing into the Truckee River. Could that happen again this year? And if so, is that normal from one year to the next, consecutive years of that happening?
Well, last year it happened for about a day, 2 days. It was just sort of just kissed the rim, and then we had rain and snow, and it came up again. This year it almost certainly will happen, probably mid-October, because this was a dry year. If it's another dry winter, then we'll be several feet below that natural rim this time next year. That's one thing. There is a lot of data on going back to the early 1900s, and it seems that the rapidity with which water level is changing is going up. A lot of water is, you know, there's a dam at Tahoe. A lot of water is shipped downstream. Planning for how much is enough and how much is not enough is a really tough problem. So it will happen. There's really 6 foot that the water managers have to play with there. So 6 foot is the top of the dam, and below that is the rim. So I think it will happen. And what we can do about it is yet one more problem a lot of people are working on.
Yeah. You held a webinar on this annual report. What kind of response have you received in the days since this latest report was released?
Actually, it's been a really great response. It was, I guess, this idea of the biological change providing an opportunity, I think, has been well received. Very often the last few years, you know, the theme is it's climate change and what can you do about it? Well, locally, not much. But suddenly the idea that we've had change, we're starting to understand what it means, And yeah, we can tackle it and try to learn from it, I think is a very positive message. And hopefully the funding to do that will be forthcoming.
Sustainable funding.
Sustainable, thank you.
Yeah, that's the important part of it. Finally, you dedicated the report to the entire Tahoe community to recognize really their resilience following last summer's wildfires. What would you like us to take away from this conversation? And how would you like us to think of Lake Tahoe moving forward?
Well, I mean, those of us who live at Tahoe, who work at Lake Tahoe, I think we're privileged. It's like living in a national park in a way, but it also gives us this responsibility to preserve it, to try to minimize our own impact on the land and to be good stewards for others. So to the extent that we survived the fire, I had friends who were evacuated and thought they'd never come back to a house or to a job. They survived. So I think this is, for them, just reinforcement that things are pretty tenuous, but we have a chance to improve them.
Yeah, there's some encouraging solutions within what could be a pretty dire report when you unpack it. Jeffrey, thank you so much for breaking down this year's State of the Lake report.
Thank you, Vicki.
Jeffrey Schlatto is the director of the Tahoe Environmental Research Center at UC Davis, providing more details on this year's State of the Lake report at Lake Tahoe. Still ahead, we'll meet Cafe Colonial, a beloved Sacramento all-ages venue in need of a lifeline to stay open. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.